This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, David Prutton, in for Clem once again as he enjoys an extended Easter break. And his loss is my gain as we've had a cracking, no pun intended, long weekend of fixtures that has decided a few things at either end of the tables, while other matters remain intensely tight and as yet not quite resolved. To help make sense of it all and provide a full post-Easter mop-up, I'll be joined by a gentleman who at the tender age of just 31 became the youngest manager in the Football League when he was appointed to the top post at Oldham Athletic just over 9 years ago, and for whom management very much runs in the family.
The benefit I had is I'd had a front row seat of watching his 15, 20 years at the coalface.
But before all of that, I'll be talking to a manager whose side are unbeaten in the last three and who now find themselves only 1 point outside the playoffs in the Sky Bet Championship after a highly impressive second half of the season so far.
The fact that we're in the mix, the fact that we're in and around some of these teams, and the fact that we're still scrapping away and keeping our season alive and very, very much in the hunt, I think is testament to everybody at the club.
It's the official EFL podcast. Right, joining us now, a man who's had a very good Easter weekend, the Millwall manager, Gary Rowett. Gary, thank you for joining us. Long time no see. How's things?
All good, Pruts. All good. When you said I've had a really good Easter weekend, I thought you were talking about like all the eggs I'd got or something. I didn't get any, mate, off the kids.
Well,
seems to be a bit of one-way traffic, I think, in my house.
It seems to be the case, isn't it? It's all take once you have offspring. And I think that's just our lot in life after that, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So, good form coming into the weekend, a decent weekend, and off the back of it now as we sit here. How have you found it, results-wise and performance-wise?
Yeah, look, it's always a hectic weekend. I mean, we started it travelling up to Preston. It wasn't a good start when the Dartford crossing was shut, and there's only a couple of ways out of South London, so it took us 7 hours on the coach to get to Preston.
No.
Yeah, as you can imagine, the players were really pleased with the preparation. Yeah. They didn't mention anything at all, so it was a tough start. I mean, going to Preston at the moment, I think their home form had been pretty good, so mm-hmm. it was always going to be a tough game anyway. But we picked up a good point, and I think people were disappointed externally linked to the club with the point, but we knew the mm-hmm. results, and I felt as though actually a point took us a step closer to the teams in the top six, and with a home game coming up against Hull, it was always going to be down to winning that one, and we managed to. So yeah, it was an enjoyable weekend, but of course you can't rest on your laurels for very long at all, unfortunately.
Very true. And the workload for the players, it's funny because having obviously the privilege of being able to speak to people like yourself and players in the game, when you talk about what the Easter weekend used to be, which was two games in 3 days, and coming off the back of getting football started again and making up time and making sure seasons start and end at the right time. A game on a Friday and a game on a Monday is pretty standard Championship fare, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you know, myself and some of the staff, that's all we seem to talk about is how football used to be. I mean, it was bloody brilliant, wasn't it? So, but yeah, full of slightly more colourful characters than there are now at times, But yeah, look, I mean, we were very used to it, weren't we? Like you say, we used to play, felt like a sort of Saturday, Monday, and it was a bit similar to the Christmas period, wasn't it? Where you played Boxing Day and then the 28th and then God knows when else. But so I think the players, you know, you're probably three hours, 45 minutes away from a normal Saturday, Tuesday, really. So it wasn't that much different. But I think it is a slightly quicker turnaround. When you've got a relatively small squad like ours, it's usually going to take a little bit more toll than some of the bigger teams. So, and I think the challenge really is, you know, for teams like ours is you've got to navigate all those obstacles. You know, they're the other obstacles in the way of just the football match. And I think when you look at teams like us, you look at teams like Luton. I think there's a lot of credit deserved, I think, for even being in the mix. But we navigated the two games pretty well, and we didn't play. You know, it's funny because you look at this stage of the season, it's a little bit cliche, but we didn't play brilliantly in either game. But we just have a way of being resilient, and and coming back in games or getting our noses in front in games, and just seems to be enough at this stage of a season, of course.
Before we get on to where Millwall are currently, obviously in the Championship and between now and the end of the season, you mentioned the size of the squad. And obviously you've got tremendous experience at managing in the Championship at different clubs with, I presume, different sizes of squads that you've had to manage and work through and deal with. Is the situation that you find yourself in with Millwall, is it of your own kind of creation? Is it to do with the financial constraints possibly that Millwall have as a football club? Is it something that's just par for the course with a manager? Different clubs have different wants, needs and abilities to deal with the size of the squads.
Yeah, well, firstly, I mean, are you, when you say experience, are you calling me old? Perhaps, is that what you're saying?
Gone evergreen. I've not said veteran. Don't you really? It's said purely in an awe-inspiring way of looking at you, thinking you're still going. Yeah. I've had so much time and pleasure to be able to sit with you when we've been working on games, and then you keep nipping off and getting proper jobs, i.e., being a manager, which I think to be able to stick in. But so yeah, Millwall right now.
Yeah, look, I think that, you know, it's a similar fit to perhaps a Birmingham where, you know, you go in and you've got to try and find ways. Let's say you've got X amount of budget. There's different ways of doing it, isn't there? You know, you can start to bring some youngsters through, which allows you a little bit more room at the top end of your team to perhaps try to make the difference. Mm. We've got a very competitive squad. I think we've probably got the best squad we've had and a squad with the most depth, but that's probably because, again, we brought in we've nurtured three or four youngsters through that have been part of the team. You know, you have the likes of Danny McNamara, Billy Mitchell, Tyler Berry started, all three of them started yesterday at different stages of their careers and different levels of experience in the Championship. But I think that's what you have to do. I think the challenge we've always felt, and we had a period mid-season where I think we had about 10 senior players out, and for a club like us, it's a horrible challenge to try and stay on teams' coattails. Yesterday, Jed wasn't available. And again, you need your best players at this stage of a season. So to lose them, we haven't necessarily got a direct replacement to just come in and offer the same level of quality and proven quality in the Championship. So yeah, but there's one or two gambles, which I think you have to do. But I think what we've got that a lot of teams in the Championship haven't got, I know there's a lot that have got it, but a lot haven't got it, is we've got that real desire and camaraderie to want to run and chase and do the ugly side of a game. But as we know in this division, can pick you a lot of points up and can win you a lot of games.
Does that come from that kind of chemistry of the players together? Because I presume as a manager and a coaching staff, you've got to create the culture of how you want the players to thrive and grow within that environment. But as I've always kind of spoken to perhaps people of a non-footballing background, chucking a load of fellas together doesn't always equal a good culture, a good atmosphere and camaraderie, does it? It's a tricky thing to get right. So how has that managed to be the case with you at Millwall? Is it a collective effort?
Well, I think there's a few things. I think one is that when you sign players, you know, for me, you have to sign players that have that character already. You know, you can't sign players and hope that they fit into the culture. You have to make sure that they're at least going to be a reasonable fit. You know, we signed Dan Ballard, for example, in the summer that had been at Blackpool, had some experience at a lower level, but was a really solid character and a really good character and come into the group and fitted straight into the group. I think the flip side to that is, the players are excellent with that, Pros. When I came in, the players, I spoke to Piercy about it. Piercy's the club captain and he's a great guy. I've got a really good relationship with Piercy. And Piercy said, all the players have jobs. And for me, I looked at a lot of, you know, I've read a lot of psychology books over the years on team dynamics. And I thought, that's interesting that they've given each other a little bit of ownership of those small details. I asked him, did he do it for that reason? He said, no, it's just something that kind of happened. So I don't think they necessarily did it intentionally, but there's a brilliant culture and the players really do run that. I mean, I'd love to sit here and take all the credit for it, but actually the players should take massive credit. We played Luton away. We stayed in a hotel and the food wasn't, I won't maybe it wasn't Luton, just in case there's any legal disclaimers out there.
Casting aspersions on hospitality in Luton.
Yeah, and the food setup wasn't great, and the food wasn't brilliant. And I heard one of the lads saying, do you know what? The more rubbish it is, the better we are. So I think the players embrace that. You know, they're not a group that expects
the
luxuries. And I think with that, it breeds a little bit of resilience, and it breeds, you know, they're here for the football and they're here to try and win games together. And you know, it's a really nice part of the group. I think it's a good place to be part of, because they are quite a humble group.
Well, it certainly feels that way. And if we turn our attention back to the actual division and where you find yourselves now in seventh, 1 point away from Sheffield United, of course, in sixth, and above them Forest, Luton, Huddersfield and the top two. A lot's been made, obviously, about the teams that are in and about there. Carlos Corbrand at Huddersfield, what Nathan Jones is doing with Luton, what Steve Cooper's done with Forest, taking over when they were bottom, and Paul Heckingbottom at Sheffield United. I feel like it's been slightly remiss that nothing else has been made of what Millwall have been doing. So when I say the term dark horses, when I say operating under the radar, it's a team with the best home record in the division. What are the expectation levels in the building from you lot? Because look where you are, and look with the games to come, there's still a decent chance, isn't there?
Yeah, but it's quite interesting, really, that you say that, because, I mean, firstly, we're quite happy with that. I don't think there's anyone at the club that wants us to be lauded for those top six positions. I think it's quite nice to be an outsider and be the chaser. As you know, sometimes you see in the top six, some of those teams are perhaps not as comfortable having to hold on to something, you know, and you see that with recent results and the pressure for them. But if you look over the last three seasons, you know, the first season we came in, we finished eighth, just missed out, I think, with two games to go. Last season without our fans, which, you know, with our home form this year, you can see, you know, the den, you know, you know what that's like for us without fans. And we finished 11th, and again, we're in the mix up until sort of three or four games to go. So it's nothing new, you know, it's nothing new for us. I mean, the team has performed consistently. And I think you get to this stage of the season where it shouldn't sound unambitious, because we want to try and achieve something. But the fact that we're in the mix, the fact that we're in and around some of these teams, and the fact that we're still scrapping away and keeping our season alive and very, very much in the hunt, I think is testament to everybody at the club and quite exciting to be part of. You know, you look at a lot of the teams, like I said, a lot of the teams have got something to lose. We've got everything to gain. We're not really thinking about, we're just thinking about enjoying the games and trying to win them and seeing where that takes us. And with three games left, you know, what a great way to end the season or potentially keep the season alive.
And given what you've seen over the course of the season, it looks like obviously Fulham are going to get there at some stage. Are they the best team that you've come up against this year, would you say?
Yes. I mean, we had two games that, whilst the scoreline of a second game at Craven Cottage didn't suggest it, there were two quite close games, but in different ways. The first game, we had a real lesson off them, the way they moved the ball. We tried to press high at the den and they just kept beating that first line of pressure, and the game just became so open. And as you know, they've got some terrific attacking qualities and pace. And they were probably the one team where no matter how you set up tactically, they just had the quality to keep trying to open you up. And I think really after that, I don't think there's any stand. I think Bournemouth will probably, well, they're going to get there because of their quality, I think. Scotty's done a really good job. You think, you know, he got Fulham promoted, he got Bournemouth promoted. People forget he's still a very young manager. And I think if he manages to do it again, yes, they've got the riches of a team that were in the Premier League. But nevertheless, you've still got to do it, and you've still got to try and get over the line. So if they do, I would say those two teams probably have been the standout quality teams in the division. And I think everywhere else was, you know, you can look at everywhere and say there's not that much difference. And I think that's it. Look, we say it every season, don't we? The Championship just springs up surprises. Yeah. Some teams drop, some teams have a little push, but ultimately there's usually about 10 teams in the mix, and this season is certainly no different.
It's certainly been fascinating to watch, and given where, as I said, you find yourselves with just three games to go. And it feels to me, in a broader sense, And it's the luxury of sitting and watching it on a sofa, drinking endless cups of coffee and filling your face with chocolate. I mean, not for one second would I say how tough it's been for the season and how long it's lasted. But to me, it's absolutely flown by. Has it been the same for you out there at the coalface?
Yeah, I think it has. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, I think the difficulty is we've had a few seasons now, haven't we, where, you know, there's been limited periods between the seasons. We've had a little bit stop and start within the seasons. It's felt quite a long period, but like you say, this season does feel like it's gone quite quickly, particularly after Christmas. You know, I think post-Christmas, certainly for us, our form has been much better. And of course, when you're winning games and you're enjoying the ride, I think it tends to go a little bit quicker than when you maybe haven't won for 6 or 7 and it's dragging a little bit and you're thinking, Jesus, when am I going to get my next win? Because it's looking a little bit hairy below me in the table. I always say, oh, we never look down at Mill. We're always looking up. But there's been a few times this season where I've had a little look at the table and thought, oh, God, we've got to win the next game. But I think, look, it's a, you know, like you say, if you're not stood on a touchline, if you're not in a studio, you're watching, we're all watching games. We love the game. It's a brilliant thing to be part of in the championship. I think, you know, our players keep reminding, I think Jed says it all the time, like our training ground facilities are not quite at Premier League level, shall we say. And Jed says it a lot. Jed will go, we're one division away from Man City. and the reality is that is the championship. You know, so, like there's going to be 3 teams this season that are going to be in the same division as Man City next season. So how exciting is it to be part of? And you know, I think the EFL in general is really flourishing, and of course the championship is a main part of that.
It's certainly a division we all love. It's funny you say that, reading reports in the papers about potentially coming up against Erling Haaland, who, I mean, whatever he ends a week will be a vast amount of money, which kind of puts things into really stark focus, don't they? Given what you've just said there with regards to looking behind you at times, I'm always fascinated by the kind of the dynamics that a manager's got to work under, because we've had a phone conversation when I think you'd come out of possibly Derby. And I vividly remember walking the dog, talking to you after you'd come out. And you, the main emotion that you had was, it's just going to be nice to have a few weeks or months, however long it is, where I'm not constantly fielding questions. I'm not constantly asked from the minute I wake up, whether the phone starts dinging, whether the first phone call comes in, Gaffer, what is the answer to this? Gaffer, what are we doing here? What's that? And then I think I texted you when you got back into the next job and saying you've obviously rested enough to want to be asked and peppered with questions. That I presume that never changes. That's what the part of the drug is, being that man that people look to be able to answer, to be able to grow together, to be able to achieve stuff together.
I think it's, do you know what it is? I think when you've been involved in football, I think we all, you know, is it the love for football or is it the highs and lows of the job? Is it just trying to avoid something that's pretty consistent? You know, I think when you've been on a touchline, it's very different from being a player as well. You know, you can win a game last minute and there's no better feeling in the world. You lose a game last minute and it feels like your world's ended. And maybe, you know, in some sort of psychotic way, I'm like most managers. And I quite enjoy that not normal feel about it, you know, that extreme feel about it. I've always said as well, I love the planning side of management. I'm probably one of the very few people that say I probably actually enjoy management more than I did playing. I loved playing, but I love managing as well. There's different challenges, but I think, you know, mentally it's far more stimulating. Of course, you think about so many different things. But it is nice to get a rest every now and then. I think that the unfortunate bit about football management is usually, like you say, you've been sacked or you've left the job and that's the only way you get a rest, you know, and then after about 3 or 4 months, you're usually itching to get back in. So, you know, it's a great job. Look, it's not even a job, is it? We've said it many times, you know, it's being part of...
It's a vocation, isn't it? It's a choice of what your career is as a professional and as a person. You've just jogged my memory about a conversation I had with Alex Neil. I was chewing his ear off in the same vein, talking about when he went transitioned from being a player to player manager to a manager. He said that very first meeting that you have, because as players and ex-players, you've all been sat there called into a meeting pre-training, pre-match, where 5 minutes in, someone's scratching his backside, looking round. Everyone's kind of looking like, dun, 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 dun. You know what I mean? You think that's one. You're sat with one of 30 lads looking at one person. And he said the minute it kind of really hit home that you were in charge was being that one pair of eyes looking back at 30 pairs of eyes with them all looking at you going, go on then. Now you're the boss. Now you're going to be the ones that setting the tone. And it seems to be a bit of that, because you've got to love it, haven't you? You've got the baseline is you've got to absolutely love being in that position and what you can create as a total.
You can't, you have. And I think for someone like Alex, you know, he went in very, very early, didn't he? He was a very, very young manager and he had that transition.
About 31, I think, yeah.
Yeah, he had that transition quite quick. I was slightly different. So, I mean, I had 4 or 5 years of actually doing coach education work for the FA, which I did because I wanted to learn different strands of coaching. So I probably spent, as I said, 2 or 3 years taking a course in Leicestershire with 30 grassroots coaches, and I'm having to deliver all week to them. So in some ways for me, it was far easier because I'd spent a lot of time speaking to groups of people and delivering talks to them, because I have to be honest, the first time I ever did it, I think I was working for England under 16s with Noel Blake. And Blakey told me about an hour before a set piece meeting. He said, oh, by the way, you're taking the set piece meeting. I'll be really honest, Prutz. My heart nearly jumped through my flipping face. It was unbelievable. I was so nervous. I didn't really know what the meeting was. And it was just a horrible, horrible feeling. But, you know, that gets better with time. It's like, I suppose it's like you presenting your first show, isn't it? You know, I would imagine the nerves would be very similar. But you get to a point where, you know, it becomes second nature, and there's always different challenges, and the job doesn't get any easier, that's for sure. And you know, but it's a great job. And like I said, we're so privileged to be part of some of these football clubs that have been around, you know, for years and years and years.
And one coming up this weekend that you know very, very well, in a bit of a sticky situation, shall we say, coming off the back of quite a chastening defeat at the weekend. When you come up against an old club, is it easy to separate heart from head and just completely focus on the result that you want?
Yeah, I think so. I've done it with a few clubs. I think there's different. I think some clubs feel different when you go back to them that you've been before. You know, I think Birmingham's one that, you know, I'll be really honest, I didn't want to leave in the first place. So that always is quite a hard one to go back to in some ways. We've had some good results going back, but it doesn't feel any easier because it feels like you still have a little bit of your part of the fabric. You know, it's not for me to comment on what's happened since, but certainly it's been a while since they've had any real stability there. And it's a shame because I think we were seventh and building a little bit like Millwall when we left. And you know, it's not easy to, people don't realise it's not easy. You can't buy your way into those positions. You've got to create a culture and it's not, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. So yeah, it does. It always feels a bit weird, if I'm being honest. You walk out, it feels a bit weird. You always get a bit of stick off the fans that once clapped and applauded you. Not every week, depends on the results. But yeah, look, it's a good club. I've got a lot of time for Birmingham. I was there as a player as well, and as you well know, when you've played somewhere and had good times with them, and also managed somewhere and had good times, it's quite hard to just put that aside. But you know, look, it's a massive game for us, and we have to go there and perform. I would imagine Birmingham on the back of that type of result. Some ways I'd rather them drew 1-1 last week because I'm sure they'll be desperate to atone for that result, and I'm sure their fans will expect their team to come out and atone for the result.
So come on then, I'm not a mind reader, nor am I trying to be smart when I say this. Between now and the end of the season, what is it? Just focus on the next game, see what happens?
I think you have to. I think we're the type of team when in the past, I know it's very, very cliche, but there's a reason.
I deal in cliches, mate. That's all it's about.
Listen, there's a reason why it's cliche, because it's true and it works and it stood the test of time. If you start looking at those top six positions and imagining yourself in them, if you start collecting your points of how many points you should get in which games due to your opponent's position in the table, you're going to come unstuck. So you have to look at the next game. You have to try and prepare as well as possible, see what result we get. We've had it before. We lost to Swansea at home. Everyone was devastated. And after in the dressing room, I said, listen, this isn't over. It'll only be over when we say it's over, you know, because you just got to keep going. And Birmingham's our next game. We have to try and get another result. You know, we picked up 7 points in the last three. So our form has been good. But it'll be as tough a challenge as going to somewhere like Fulham, going to somewhere like Bournemouth. It won't be any easier. It'll be about our attitude and let's see if we can go there and pick some good points up.
Well, guys, I know it's your day off, so we really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us here on the official EFL podcast. It's good to see you again, and we wish you all the very best between now and the end of the season.
Top man, Proj, you got me out of shopping, mate. Thanks a lot.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Okay, I'm delighted to welcome to the official EFL podcast the former Oldham, Barnsley, Bristol City and Sunderland manager Lee Johnson. Lee, very good to see you. How's things?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Obviously itching to coach, but at the same time enjoying the family time and investing a little bit of emotional capital in those.
Nice. That is a strong start with emotional capital. That's the first thing I'm going to steal from this conversation and put into everyday life. Given we're going to get stuck into the weekend in the Championship and Leagues 1 and 2, but being in the position where you are in between clubs, how this kind of hectic period of the season, how have you viewed it? Is one that you were itching to be a part of or glad to have a bit of rest away from the coalface?
Well, I'm hoping I'm in between clubs. I think that's the first thing.
That's what managers always are. You know that.
Do you know what? It's been up and down. There's no doubt in that, especially when we were fighting for something at Sunderland. You know, you struggle a little bit on the match days. And having spoke to managers that are out of work that have partaken in three quarters of a season, that's exactly how it feels for them as well. But what I've tried to do is just keep myself busy. I've been going to games. I went out to Monaco. I went out to Juventus to just do a little bit of CPD, bit of learning. And I really enjoyed that because I've mixed it up nicely. On the back end of Juventus, I went skiing in the Italian Alps. And in Monaco, obviously, it's a fantastic place to spend a long weekend as well. So I've enjoyed it, actually. I've enjoyed just like, I think reflecting, you know, stepping back a little bit, having a look at the last sort of 8-9 years in management and trying to polish to be a better person, a better manager.
When you hear of managers doing what you've done there, a bit of travel, seeing the way that different clubs operate, just talk us through that. Is it an invitational thing? Is it something that you seek out? Because the vibe I get having the chance and the pleasure to speak to managers like yourself is there's a real fraternal bond and an appreciation of what you, once you get into the club, are going through and what the experience is. And that seems to open doors across, well, as it's shown, across Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you make contact. Football's actually quite a small world. And, you know, if you've got decent contacts, and I think when I say decent contacts, I mean decent people and good people, like you say, that will look after you, if you like, when you're in those moments. Everybody understands that football's hectic and busy. But there's always that period where someone's out of work, and that could be a sporting director, that could be a manager, that could be a coach, could be a physio, and you try and look after people in those times. So what's nice is that often they're invitations, sometimes you ask, but very rarely, if you like. And I think it's a consistency of contact that then when you're out of work, somebody says, oh, look, you should come over.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. And I think that's enjoyable. I've always found those visits, those study visits, really key because you can bring back little parts of somebody else's philosophy and adapt them into your own.
Well, it's certainly an intriguing way to go about, as you say, this interim period before the next club comes inevitably knocking. I can say that from experience, having worked with you, my friend, that will be very shortly around the corner. Right, let's get stuck into what we saw over the course of the weekend. The Championship, I said the course of the weekend, it was Tuesday night that Fulham managed to get promotion back to the Premier League, seal it, just with a small matter of Alexander Mitrovic, his 40th goal of the season. Now, Can you, as a manager, can you put that into any form of context? And as a former player yourself, it's It's mind-blowing what he's managed to do there, surely, isn't it?
It's absolutely phenomenal. To score 40 goals in a difficult league, a championship, particularly for strikers, is a tough league. Obviously, Fulham are a top side because it's not just the goals, it's the assists as well, isn't it? It's the team play that leads up to those goals. You know, Mitrovic in the championship is just an absolute machine. His finishing, his types of finishing, you know, his physicality. He doesn't seem to have to really run channels, you know, because of the quality of Fulham in that division. He can pretty much sort of work in between the posts, and obviously the little movements, the little intricacies, the quality of the finishes, the variation of the finishes, the shoulder position to receive is really something to look at and to marvel on.
It's certainly been a joy to behold from a neutral standpoint watching it. I mean, what have you made of Fulham as a whole? You talk about the level of the championship, but also with a team like Fulham, there's expectation heaped on the shoulders. Over the past 4 or 5 years, it's either been promotion or relegation, hasn't it? It's certainly been an intriguing period of time to follow that club from West London. As you say, there's probably quite a straightforward school of thought where good team, good squad equals promotion. But being a manager, you know it's not as simple as that, is it?
Absolutely. And also Fulham are a massive scalp, aren't they? So every team in the championship is going to want to beat them. You know, it's a feather in the cap of the managers and the players to beat a side like Fulham. It's been a really interesting journey. Obviously, they spent a lot of money. I think they've learned their lessons from going into the Premier League and maybe not trusting the guys that got them there in the first place. And I think that would be interesting to see how they cope with that. For me personally, like 3/4 of my family are Fulham fans. So they're absolutely delighted all living around that sort of Hammersmith area. And they're buzzing. And I think that Marco Silva's done a great job. You know, it's a great job for Marco Silva now he's taken him into the Premier League. But you do have to put yourself out there, especially when you've managed as many top flight games as he has. And I think he's kept it steady, he's kept it consistent, and they've just kept churning out win upon win. And look, the amount of goals, they've scored 98 goals already.
Frightening, isn't it?
That is, if you can get to 100 goals and over 90 points, then that you're doing something extremely right in any division.
So if 3/4 of your family are Fulham fans, what do they then think about next season? I've got a friend of mine who's an ardent Fulham fan, and he said how much he's enjoyed this season. He might not enjoy it as much yet, but he is a bit of a cynic. I'll mitigate in that regard. But if from the outside looking in, what do they do different? How do they change what the narrative's been?
I think you've got to adapt to being a possession side to expecting less possession. I think that's what they failed to do in the past. You know, any team going up from the Championship, Norwich, we've seen it with, you know, very expansive. They've got high quality players, not necessarily top athletes. And I think that's the damage. When you go into the Premier League, you play expansive. If you haven't got top athletes, you can get hit like so quickly on the counter. I think Fulham are going to have to find that balance of possession and that balance of like behind the ball, and make sure just they sign a couple of players with, like, you know, your Kante type player that could look after everybody else positionally, allow them to go and be creative, but can stop out any danger very quickly. I don't think they did that in the previous sort of seasons they've been promoted. And they could spend probably, in my eyes, a third of their budget on one or two very good players behind the ball. I think that would set them up really well.
Well, it'll be intriguing to see how they attack it, and not wanting to rain on their parade at all. Just throwing it forward here on the official EFL podcast, because we're going to miss discussing them over the course of the next season. Intriguing to see the way that they attack the Premier League. Elsewhere, Bournemouth in second. They have got games in hand, though, on the likes of Huddersfield Town and Luton Town, who are hot on their heels. Nottingham Forest, possibly an intriguing one. They've played 41 games, as well as Bournemouth have as well. Sheffield United currently in sixth. Given where Bournemouth are, Lee, do you expect them to handle that chasing pack and box off second? Well, not second spot, but an automatic promotion place?
Yes, I think so. I think they've got enough of a cushion, you know, with 2 games in hand on Huddersfield and 4 points ahead of them. I don't think that nip of pressure sets in. You know, they've got a couple of awful results in them to steal. have it in their own hands. And I think actually that allow them to play with that little bit more freedom and see them over the line.
As for the rest of the playoff chasing teams, Huddersfield, Luton, Forest and Sheffield United, Millwall as well just sat a point outside their level on games with Sheffield United. Do you see the top six, obviously the four underneath the top two, being as that when we come to the end of the season? Are they the four playoff teams for you?
I think there's a little bit of football to be had yet. Nice. I really do. I mean, that sort of up until pre the sort of bank holiday weekend, that sort of fifth and sixth place, nobody wanted it almost. Mm. The teams in and around it and the form, everybody seemed to be struggling. But Millwall have snuck up on the blind side, gone about their business like steady, quiet, 4 points over the bank holiday weekend. And now, like, really in touching distance. And it'd be interesting on their mindset. You know, they've got momentum. I think they've got a good group of players there. Obviously, Guerrero, I think, has done a really good job as well. They're punching above their weight. And, I could see all the way down to Middlesbrough, particularly with that game in hand, some changes. I think it's a bit much for QPR, sat at 10. There are 3 points with three games left. But there's almost too many teams ahead of them, I think, for them to make one of those last two places. But I think that's one of the stories of the season, who's going to nick into that fifth and sixth spot in the Championship.
I definitely agree with that. Given the job, perhaps, that Carlos Corberan's done, that Nathan Jones has done, we've seen Steve Cooper take Forest from the bottom all the way to fifth. Obviously, there's a change in management at Sheffield United with Paul Heckingbottom coming in. Out of the four other teams that sit there at the moment, who are you? What name of the ones I've just mentioned there jumps out at overachieving, at doing an incredible job?
For me, Luton. Both Huddersfield and Luton. You could say that about Forest as well, considering where they come from at the start of the year. And Steve Cooper's done an amazing job. I think anybody in the top sort of six, eight of the Championship has done a great job, because it's such a difficult league. But you do look at the likes of Luton, they've probably got the second lowest budget in the division, and Nathan Jones just seems to have something special at that football club. From where he's taken it from and to, it's an unbelievable story, and you wouldn't bet against them. You know, you look at their squad, you look at the group, and they're just so finely tuned with cohesion. And it seems to almost run itself now. I bet the dressing room runs itself. I bet the manager gets the space to be able to work, because he's integrated in the building, and he's got control of that place in the best possible way. And I think in this day and age, where it's very difficult for a manager head coach to have control, I think that's a real benefit. And with Carlos at Huddersfield, that's another really nice story, just because he stepped out of Bielsa's shadow, in my eyes, and it was a big, big challenge. And I think to actually implement the best bits of Bielsa's philosophy, but also, you know, bring his own USP to that club, like, it's an amazing job he's done. And like, next year will be interesting in the Championship, but while you're there, you've got to give it everything to go and obviously get into that promised land.
Absolutely. And if we take a look at the other end of the table, the promised land, a fair way away from the teams down there that we're going to talk about. Barnsley propping the table up, a club you know well, of course, Derby County. It's been a monumental fight, hasn't it, from Wayne Rooney and his players against what have now become, in footballing terms, insurmountable odds. And Peterborough in 22nd place. They are 7 points behind Reading, who are in 21st with three games to go for both of those. Right, let's start at the bottom. Given your experience of Barnsley and where they are now, I'm sure you look back on your time there with fondness. And are the pangs there that still hurt when you see a club that you know in that type of position?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you always have a place in your heart for any former club, whether it be a player or as a manager. I left Barnsley to go to Bristol City, so maybe the fans don't have the same mindset on me, but it was a really good club. And for me, it's always about the people that you're working with. It's about the staff, it's about the players, and about the fan base. And that is a passionate Yorkshire club, you know, that like aggressive front foot football. They want goals, they want balls in the box, they want action. And they'll be disappointed after such a fantastic season last season, losing the manager, some bad decisions in the terms of recruitment, and it just hasn't caught flames this year. You know, even if you look at the hierarchy and the issues that they've had with the ownership, I'm telling you, you get that hierarchy right, everything else sort of down the chain fits into place. And it's a really difficult season for them. I don't think they deserve it as a fan base. And again, going down into League One, you know, you look at Derby relegated, Barnsley sort of all but relegated. That's a tough league, mate. League One is a tough, tough league, you know, with some big, big hitters, particularly likes of Ipswich next year, expected to go again. Whoever doesn't go up from the playoffs, you've got Pompey in there. Some big clubs, Derby going down. And I think that Barnsley might have a couple of years of a rebuild, actually, before they get back to where they need to be.
Just a little touch on Derby, as I'd said. What's your thoughts on the job that Wayne Rooney's done with the players that he's had available, of course, because it's been a lot of youngsters being blooded, transfer embargoes, having to work underneath that. A whole maelstrom of things going on above and beyond what football's about, which is playing football on a green patch with white lines on, isn't it? As simple as that. The way that Rooney's conducted himself, how have you found it?
It's been really interesting to watch. I played for Derby, albeit a short spell, for a month on loan. And again, you pick up that feeling of what a big football club it is, what a great football club it is. So I've watched that and I've watched it closely. And I think it's been a phenomenal job from the football side. If you look at, like you say, Wayne's temperament, the fact that he's stayed despite having opportunities to leave, he's seen it through. You know, there's been takeover upon takeover that's fallen away and hasn't gone through. So every time everybody's hopes get up, they get taken away and dashed again completely. And that is difficult, you know, to work as a player, but also as a manager. So I think the consistency of message from the coaching staff has been important. And at the game, obviously having been officially relegated, it was amazing to see the 2,000 Derby fans like singing Wayne Rooney's name, singing sort of historic, defiant Derby songs, backing the players. And there's been some really nice stories come out of this season for Derby in terms of young players that wouldn't have had the opportunity to play for such a great club had they not been in that situation. So again, it would be a difficult prospect for Derby to come straight back up. And I just hope that this next month is massive for them in terms of this takeover, because if that doesn't go through, there's some big problems on the horizon. If it does, they get a real chance to rebuild. Wayne can stick in there and then obviously they can start challenging in League One.
Yeah, that's right. That's Chris Kirchner, isn't it? The administrator's preferred bidder. We're going to keep a very keen eye on that. And just given where Peterborough are, just below Reading, without throwing it forward too much, you said about Barnsley, obviously they're 11 points from safety, but with 12 points left to play for. Realistically, does the bottom three look like the bottom three to you would be at the end of the season?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tall ask, you know, for anybody to get out of that bottom three now. Just, and it has been done before, but Reading seem to have hit a little bit of form. They seem to have got a bit of spirit under Paul Ince, and I think they'll pick up the points even if the other guys manage to maximise their points. You know, Peterborough have got Nottingham Forest at home, they've got Millwall away, and then they've got Blackpool as well. So, you know, two teams there obviously still fighting for something. It'll be a difficult game. But again, their form's increased under the new manager, which has been interesting to see. Grant McCann just picked up two wins and two draws. And players like Johnson Clark-Harris, one of my old players, looking like he's a real deal again in the Championship. And when he's at it, Jono, he's a very difficult player to play against. I think his form showed that in the last month.
Of course, and we saw him score an absolute bagful, didn't we, at League One level? So potentially positives on the horizon with that. You mentioned Neil Critchley as well. They're playing Blackpool the last day of the season. Another fine job from him up at Bloomfield Road. Right, let's take a look at League One. And you mentioned about it being a tough league. There's also been a nice bit of drama at the top, hasn't it? Because as we look at, you mentioned fifth and sixth spot in the Championship and almost teams falling over themselves not to actually grab that with both hands. If we look at results over the course of the weekend, and as ever, there were more games in League One last night with Wigan drawing against Ipswich Town, MK Dons losing to Oxford United, Rotherham losing to Burton Albion. So the top two, as it stands, Wigan and Rotherham, 5 points between those two. MK Dons back in third on 83 points, the same, of course, as Rotherham, but Rotherham with a game in hand, as do Wigan. Sheffield Wednesday with another good win. Plymouth and Wickham Wanderers rounding out the top six. It's been consistently intriguing and exciting and entertaining, the end of the League One season, for what feels like about the past 5 years, doesn't it? And we've got teams in there again. Strong teams that have had good seasons so far. At one point, it looked like Rotherham were home and hosed, but they got clawed back in by Wigan. And MK Dons obviously still sniffing around those top two places. How do you see that battle for the two automatic promotion spots?
It's getting touchy, isn't it? It's squeaky bum time, as they say. Yeah, I think it's another great league. Obviously, I've experienced whatever 70% of it this year. Not managing to be able to see the job through, which I was disappointed with, but at the same time, respecting, I mean, just looking from eighth all the way up, 75 points Oxford are on eighth. Like any other year, that would be enough for a playoff place already. Yeah. So for the top teams have just shown like some fantastic form throughout the season, but particularly recently. And clubs like MK Dons been on a run, really put the pressure on Rotherham. I think at one point, Paul Warne was probably sat with his Baileys and a cigar.
we both know Warne. I mean, would he ever do that before anything was said?
Protein shake and maybe...
It would be, wouldn't it? and a bag of seeds.
And obviously, Wigan have done a great job as well. I think the interesting thing for recruitment for Wigan is Liam's been allowed to recruit to win. Do you know what I mean? There's been no restrictions on recruitment. It hasn't been, right, you've got to sign everybody under 23. You know, he's been able to go and get players, round pegs, round holes that do the job to get promoted in this division, and another sterling job. So obviously, Sheffield Wednesday, massive club. Plymouth, like you could say, overachieving this season, considering the clubs around them. Wickham, Sunderland and Oxford, you know, like big clubs at this moment in time because of their recent sort of history.
Well, it'd be remiss, wouldn't it, not to mention your position in Sunderland and your experience of what you've seen from it this season. And don't get me wrong, Lee, I don't need the ins and outs, which legally... possibly where managers leave clubs can get you into trouble. But from the point of view of looking at the job that was going on, it seemed from the outside looking in, it was quite an abrupt change in management. So when you do come out of that position after being in it and living and breathing it and knowing exactly, having had the chance to speak to you in and around games that we've done over the past God knows how long, and what's gone into your work preparation and mode, giving absolutely everything, covering all the bases that you possibly can, being able to give as much of yourself into the job as is wholeheartedly needed. You come out of that and then you look back at a club that you've been at. Is there enough space to look at it now objectively? Can you take away the emotion of looking at your time at Sunderland and any points of the experience where you'd go, maybe I'd do that differently, or I was bang on with doing that? And is it just an overall sense of frustration that you're not there to see the job through?
Yeah, I think that first and foremost, I love my time there. I thought it was a phenomenal fan base, phenomenal club. If I had the money, I'd buy it myself.
You would need very, very deep pockets, I think, wouldn't you?
I'm having a whip round, if you don't mind. That's how good a club I think it is. You know, absolutely loved it. I had a good rapport with the fans, the players, the staff are phenomenal there, great people. Truly brilliant experience. Now, I think when you're 2 points off top, like, you don't expect necessarily to get the sack. But of course, there's always things that go on behind the scenes. And sometimes, like any marriage, you sort of drift apart or you've got different ideas. But it doesn't mean that I don't want the club to be successful. You know, I'm still connected to every one of those players in that squad. Well, 95% of them I signed. And you want them to do well. It's as simple as that, and you want the staff to do well. So I think, probably the period after I left, maybe the players were a little bit down, I think. Mm. I think that's fair to say. And the results directly after that weren't great. But then the king is dead. Long live the king. Alex Neil comes in. You know, he's a good manager. You know what it's like. Players quickly spin round and focus on again. And they've had some good form recently. So I don't get bitter or frustrated. I sort of smile, if you like, because I really enjoyed my time there. I think the difficult thing for the families is the distance, you know, 14-year-old daughter at school. Do you move them? You know, yeah. Like, my only regret probably from the whole time there is the final game. And at 3-0 down at Bolton, I still believe we could get a draw or maybe even win the game with like 40 minutes left. So had I had my time again, I'd have probably gone, okay, I'll stick another centre-half on. But we won many games because of that attitude, if you know what I mean, which is sometimes going to leave you open to a pasting or two.
Well, there is, and that, I think, if you are, I hesitate to use the word purist when it comes to football, but there are different ways of approaching a season. There's sometimes it's a sense of, let's see how many games we don't lose, rather than your MO, which is, let's see how many games we can win. Let's go out every single time. And there must be that added pressure with the proverbial big fish in that smaller pond that as Sunderland manager, you've got to actively seek to win more games than draw games, than lose games. I mean, that sounds very, very straightforward and pretty idiot-proof. But having played against that side and seeing that side at different levels of the pyramid, they're a proud bunch of people that expect to go out and win, or at least attempt to win every single game, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, that was they were a massive part. The fans were a massive part of the home form. I think we had the best home form in the country when I got the sack, to be fair. So, like, they were probably the biggest part of that. And obviously, having experienced a time without fans, you learn to appreciate the fans in the stadium just that bit more. Like you say, you talk about the MOs, like, actually it was sort of three-pronged. You know, you wanted to win every game, but also wanted to sign players that were young and bring the average age of the squad down, as we did 5 or 6 years from 28, I think, to 22.5 or something like that. And then obviously you want to trade as well. So you've got to be able to develop those players from within. And that was the challenge that I enjoyed. I enjoyed that at Bristol. But of course, that comes at times with naivety and with errors that can come with that. And then you grow, you come through little patches and spells. And I really believe in that squad. I think that squad's a good squad of good young players, talented players, can play good football. And I think they can be successful this year. They've got a game in hand on Plymouth and Wickham, albeit that game in hand against Rotherham. But I think like three games, everything to play for.
You say about the position that you found yourself in coming out of Sunderland, which is in stark contrast, of course, to when we look at the bottom four: Fleetwood, AFC Wimbledon, Doncaster Rovers. Crewe have already unfortunately fallen through the trapdoor. Gary McSheffrey took over from Richie Wellens at Doncaster Rovers, his first senior football management job. It's potentially looks, I mean, as you say, all but down. The position that he finds himself in as a young manager in his first job, and it blows the mind to think that it will come on to Oldham in due course, yours at 31. How imperative, how important for whatever comes next in your managerial career is that you're perceived to get that first job right? And I'm using right in inverted commas, because right doesn't necessarily mean survival, doesn't necessarily mean safety, promotion, etc. It's just about your perception as that manager of that football club. If you're seen to be doing the right things, that's a first step on this ladder that could be infinite. It could be one that's got three steps on it and you're out the door. How important, put yourself in the shoes of Gary McSheffrey, and where's he sat now emotionally and professionally?
Yeah, I've been in his shoes. When I took over Oldham, there was 10 games to go and it was a relegation battle, and very bravely now it looks like that they put me in charge to, as a rookie really, to get out of trouble. So it was an amazing feat to win. I think we won 5 out of 10 and drew a couple to get out of trouble. But when you go in somewhere that's not performing well, you've got to do something. You know, you've got to get quick wins, whether that's recruitment, whether that's a change of formation, whether that's a change of tempo and attitude. The team might not be fit enough. Mm. It was a really difficult job going in there. I mean, we played Doncaster just after, I think, two or three games after he was made official. And it looked a bit dead. Do you know what I mean?
I think we showed the game. It was a live game, I think, wasn't it?
We won 3-0. It was a very comfortable game for us. Mm. And then actually, the game after I got sacked, they played Doncaster Sunderland, and I watched that game as well. And you could see in that period of time that, like, it was only sort of 3 or 4 weeks apart from those two games, but you could see the impact that it had. You could see the tempo change. You could see senior players, like, organising younger players around the pitch. And obviously, it was a great win for them. So I think they'll be a little bit disappointed at that sort of little burst of form's tailed off a little bit. However, I also know, and they've had issues of injuries this year to key players, if you're one of the smaller budgets in the division, and listen, they're not the smallest, they're still probably maybe a top half budget, I'd say, but they have had key players injured. And if you do have that, sometimes you risk almost the risk reward of quality over quantity is very dangerous if you get injuries to key players at a club like Doncaster. And that's what's happened, because, like, if your big players get injured, generally the ones coming in are either young, inexperienced, or cheap stocking fillers. Mm. And I think that little balance, particularly from the start of the season, has just got them in that rut that's very difficult to get out with, especially against a division that you can see the top 11, top 12, that are big clubs, and most of those
huge names, aren't they?
Most of those have been in the Premier League within the last sort of 6-7 years.
Frightening, really, isn't it? Right, let's dip down into League Two, top three there: Forest Green, Exeter City, and Port Vale. Again, it was another team which, I mean, as so-called experts, pundits, and professionals, there was a certain stage of the season where, like, Forest Green were champions elect. Given where they are now, 5 points clear of Exeter City in second. Port Vale, as I said, back in third, but played a game more than the top two. Does it feel like this is Forest Green learning from the playoff heartbreak of last season and getting the job done in real time?
I think it's a great story. It's another one that's been a consistent story. You know, the football that they play, the quality that they've got speed, they've lost key players, and they've managed to go again and recruit in a part of the country, by the way, that's not easy to commute to. You know, like, if you live in Oldham, for example, your budget actually goes further because people don't have to move, you haven't got to pay relocation. There's probably 30 clubs within an hour of Manchester. Forest Green, there's not, you know what I mean? So they've got to relocate.
Plus, it's full of all the rich people from London, isn't it? The Cotswolds. So, property prices are sky high anyway.
They eat very healthy, don't they? So, they've done a good job. And listen, for me, they'll be promoted as champions. You know, you don't go on that type of run and the type of form they're in with the cushion they've got without breeding confidence. And
that firepower that you mentioned, Lee, I mean, the two Matt's phenomenal strikers really playing together, aren't they?
Absolutely. And I think those sort of League Two strikers are always just really interesting. I think Stephen's got 23 goals this year. Mm. So, again, that's a phenomenal return. And if you've got strikers in form, listen, as midfielders, mate, how easy was it?
it took so much responsibility of my way with passing amazing. If they were scoring goals.
It was like, look, I'll do your running. I'll try and get you the ball as early as possible, but please, you just do the business and make me look good.
It was akin to Cantona calling Didier Deschamps a water carrier. I was like, that's gladly take that if it gets you in a successful team. That's me doing you a disservice, mate. I was far more of a water carrier than you ever were. One of the big games, obviously, over the course of the weekend was Port Vale and Bristol Rovers, which for Vale, I think it was one of the biggest home crowds I've had for about the last 5 years. And we spoke to Andy Crosby ahead of that one. And he wasn't actually looking forward to that. He was looking forward to the next game, of course, which is Good Friday, which is management speak for taking each game as it comes. But that from a confidence point of view, it leaves Bristol Rovers with the same amount of games played, but just 2 points behind Vale in that third automatic promotion spot. It's something that you mentioned earlier on with the teams involved, confidence, momentum, and having that ability to chase down teams rather than the one that's being chased. Does that set up, again, not necessarily a grandstand finish, but a proper all-out sprint to the finish line between these clubs looking to get into the automatics?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously living in around the Bristol area, you can feel it. You can feel the vibe of Bristol Rovers at the moment. I think they've got a phenomenal player in Elliot Anderson that they took on loan from Newcastle. I've watched him numerous occasions, and for me, he's a championship standard sort of number 10 already and play in the Premier League. So hell of a sign in that one. I think he scored the first equaliser actually against Port Vale.
Yeah.
And I just think that extra bit of quality in that league, you know, if you've got solid, steady players that can give you sort of 7, 8 out of 10 every week with a couple of bits of sparkle like Elliot Anderson, then I think that I honestly think they'll get automatic Bristol Rovers. I think they'll have enough over the last two or three games to capitalise. I really do. And it'd be interesting because obviously it was tough for them last year getting relegated.
Absolutely, yeah.
League One. They stuck with Joey. You know, Joey's got his own ideas. He's very strong. He's very opinionated. And he's bold. And I think that at the moment they're playing bold and they're playing brave. So I honestly think they could be the ones. Northampton are up there as well. Mm-hmm. But I could see Bristol Rovers winning all three of their last games. And then I think that'll put obviously real pressure on Port Vale and potentially Exeter to stick in there.
I think it's right, isn't it, to mention Sutton United in dispatches, getting to the Papa John's Trophy final, first season in the Football League, currently sat sixth, a point above Mansfield in eighth, Salford City are in ninth with 66 points, 66 points for Newport County as well in 10th. As a club that's come into the division you talk about consolidation. It's a phenomenal return, isn't it, for a club of that size, that stature. Yes, we all know about Sutton United beating Coventry a lifetime ago in the FA Cup, but they're writing their own history going forward now, aren't they, given what they've done so far this season?
Yeah, do you know what? It reminds me of the story that we had at Yeovil. It's not about me and it's not about, it's about Sutton, but you do get that momentum. You know, it's a new league, but you believe in what you're doing. And it doesn't matter how big a club you are. You know, you're not playing the history of every club you play in League Two. What you're playing is 11 men that you believe you're better than. And when you get that spirit and you build that spirit, not just in the playing squad, but in the club, so powerful. And if they make the playoffs this year, that is a phenomenal achievement. They were excellent in the Papa John's final. It was another game that I did, probably in the media too much at the moment. But
it's all good PR, mate. It's all good PR.
I really enjoyed their performance. Like it was aggressive. They were better than Rotherham pretty much for 85 minutes of the 90, and then just fell a little bit short physically, as you do as you go up the leagues in extra time. And actually, like with a game in hand, like they must capitalise on that. Like even if it's just a point, you know, just to keep the momentum, just to keep those that steady flow of spirit that they've got. And if they don't go up this year, it wouldn't be surprised if I see them in the top three next year. And that, that screen story is actually similar as well. And in non-league now, sometimes they're bigger spenders than in the Football League. You know, you've got
strong teams, aren't they?
Yeah, you've got the likes of Wrexham, you've got the likes of Stockport. They both come up next year. I'd expect them to almost go straight through again.
We'll keep a keen eye on that, of course. Always nice with a sprinkle of Hollywood, of course, in the EFL, potentially. If we look down at the bottom, Harrogate 20th, 47 points, but obviously below them it's Barrow and Stevenage, both on 41. Then we get to the bottom two. Scunthorpe, unfortunately, moving away from the Football League. Oldham Athletic is obviously a team that we need to address, Lee, given where they are. 43 games played. They're 37 points, 4 points behind Stevenage in 22nd. They do have a game in hand, as do Barrow. We mentioned earlier on in our chat, it was your first port of call as a manager. And given, like you said, the escape pact that you managed to create with that set of players, John Sheridan once again going into Oldham Athletic, once again entrusted with trying to get them out of the trouble that they find themselves in. Emotionally, how do you judge where they are? Professionally, how do you judge where they are?
Emotionally, I don't like it because that is another club that's a truly wonderful club with great people that have been there a long time and really should be getting a better link with the big clubs.
Especially geographically where they are, isn't it? That's another one.
Absolutely. I mean, by the time I left Oldham, we was in and around top six. We had very good links with like Man City and the City Group. We had top players coming on loan. We had the likes of Tarkowski. We had Johnson Clark Harris. Corey Smith was in there. That was, we were good. That we had a good 13 players, 14 players, and maybe could have got promoted had it been for some bad injuries. And the owner at the time, Simon Corney, was a world-class wheeler and dealer as well. And we used to use everything we could, you know, whether it be offering minutes to clubs, whether it be like offering links with big clubs and not sort of a parent club, but you know what I mean? Just a strong handshake that will take their best players. Agents, you know, we would try and get their best younger ones to promote them. And we did everything. If Oldham fall out of the league, like that is worrying because that is a historic club that, in my eyes, shouldn't be anywhere near the bottom of League Two. Like, minimum should be fighting for playoffs in League One.
Very much so. Right, let's just given where that was where you started your managerial career, and now 9 years into it, which I'm sure has absolutely flown by for you, given how intense a manager's lot is. Was it always on the cards? Your dad, of course, Gary Johnson, so much experience he's got at a management level currently at Torquay as well. Was it always there? Was it always in the back of your mind? Did it come about because of circumstance, because of opportunity? Were you the one taking notes? Is it anything that you ever discussed with your dad?
I think, like, naturally, you know, you follow your dad's footsteps. Obviously, I played for my dad as well, which obviously came with difficulties. But for me, I made a very conscious decision at 24, to start on my coaching badges. And I actually chronologically sort of timed everything out in terms of that progress, you know, your level two, your B license, your A license, pro license. And I wanted to make sure, I think the important thing was that I was ready by the time of retirement, which was, I thought, would be 35. In the end, it was 31. Whether it was because of injury or wasn't good enough, it's hard to tell, but somewhere in between. but mainly, I had to create my own contacts away from my dad. You know, when you play for your dad, you're always Lee, son of Gary.
Yeah.
But I had to turn that so it was Gary, dad of Lee, if you know what I mean. I know that. Such a fine tweak, but it was really important to be able to do that. And like, it was going to be difficult to do that at the time in my playing career. And therefore, my contacts had to be very different to his. And I had to earn my own way in the coaching world. And that takes time, you know, hours and hours on the coaching field. And anybody that tells you they can go straight from playing into management without doing the hours, is a poor coach, because I know how detailed being a quality coach is. But for me, the benefit I had is I'd had a front row seat of watching his 15, 20 years at the coalface, as you described it. I think that helped me get through those early tricky situations that every manager gets. And I think the biggest thing for new managers, talking about Gary McSheffrey, is that they have a corner. They've got to have a group of people, mentors, people they can bounce ideas off, you know, people that can see the wood from the trees, and ex-managers. And for me, I've had some great sort of role models, if you like, that have helped me through situations that inevitably are there in football management.
Have you felt that perception change, because you go from being seen as relatively innocent and young at 31 as a manager. I mean, which we both can relate to this, which from a playing point of view, you hit the corner into your 30s and then you're suddenly a veteran, an elder statesman, more experienced. And then you kind of go from that into the managerial stratosphere, which is then seen as you very much being back to the baby steps of being the new kid on the block. Now, as a man of your age and experience, are those meetings different, those potential interviews different now because you've got a body of work behind you that anybody would be proud of and clubs behind you that anybody would be privileged to have been a part of? You now are in a position that you are coming towards what feels like possibly the real meat in the middle of your managerial career, whatever comes next?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point and a brilliant question. How long have you got? I think the first part, when you mentioned perception in football, and actually for us managers, perception is reality. I think that is the tricky piece. I'm probably at my most experienced now that I've ever been. I'm probably at my best. I obviously hope to improve. But like every experience you get, you grow. And like I feel that sat in front of somebody, it's obviously quite easy to articulate those experiences. But people do form an opinion, both positive and negative. And football's very opinionated, whether that be a fan base, whether that be chairmen. You know, you've only got you're working for your club, but you can do an interview after the game and it sound biased and one-sided and you're written off as an absolute idiot, which I've been written off many times as that. But I think it's all part of it, you know, and it's like smoke and mirrors and games. And what you're trying to find is that purity as much as possible on the training pitch. You know, the egos, the players that come with their entourages now, and obviously the higher up you go, decisions being made at hierarchical level based on Twitter followers and Instagram followers, whether to re-sign players or not.
Wow.
And I'm just like about the fear, about living and dying on the sword as a player, as a coach. And I think the sabotage to the team is too much now. And I think, like, you look, we've talked about these clubs, like there has been a purity to some successes this year, you know, like Wigan as a great example, Forest Green, Exeter. I mean, these are clubs that have been consistent, if you like, particularly Forest Green and Exeter, for a number of years now, very similar to the Brentford story. So it's that consistency to make the right decisions more often than not for the benefit of the team, which I think brings success.
Well, Lee, this has been absolutely fascinating, mate. Really appreciate you taking the time and having played against you in a former life and followed you in your managerial career since. It's something we're going to keep a keen eye on here on the official EFL podcast. I know you've been jet-setting around the world. I know you've enjoyed a bit of skiing, a bit of sunshine. I hope the summer brings a bit more R&R before you're ready to go again. I've no doubt at all at some stage, and I've been kind of reticent to ask you about that because I know managers keep the cards close to the chest. So we're going to watch this and see where you next end up, and we'll be thoroughly intrigued, and we wish you all the very best with it. Thanks for your time, my friend.
Thanks very much. Really enjoyed it. Appreciate being invited on.
Well, that's about it for this episode. A big thank you to our guests this week, Lee Johnson and Gary Rout, for their company. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton. Thanks very much for listening, and join us same time next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.